I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, what has happened to the political scandal? There was a time when scandal could bring down a presidency, but in today's hyperpartisan America, even shocking allegations don't always seem to stick. From Watergate to Clinton, from George Santos to Donald Trump, we look at how scandal has changed, why polarization, partisan media, big money, disinformation, they all now help politicians ride out controversies that once might have ended their careers. Do scandals still matter? Or has outrage become so constant that it has lost its power? We talk with political scientist Brandon Ridinghouse about his new book, Scandal: Why Politicians Survive Controversy in a Partisan Era. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We've just witnessed a scandal bring down a powerful politician. Congressman Tony Gonzalez was forced to drop out of his reelection bid for the 23rd Congressional District after he admitted that he had an affair with a staffer, and that staffer took her own life last September. But Gonzalez, he remains in Congress. He has not resigned. He has not stepped down after this scandal. And we're seeing that scandal did have some impact, though, but there is a limit. So why is that? Turns out that scandals really are more complicated than we imagine. We think that a politician, that he may just say there's some sort of news that comes out, it's embarrassing, maybe it's illegal, it's hypocrisy, and so therefore he just quits his career out of shame. Well, it just doesn't work that way. It seems like politicians are able now to withstand scandals better today than they did 20 years ago or however long ago. And so why is that? Brandon Ridinghouse takes a look in his new book, Scandal: Why Politicians Survive Controversy in a Partisan Era. And Brandon Ridinghouse, welcome to The Source.
Hey, thanks, David.
So what exactly is a scandal? What qualifies as a scandal?
Well, scandals can be lots of things. In particular, to define it with clarity for the book, what I did was to look at things that were in two categories. The first is something that, if it was true, would be illegal. So if it was money laundering or something along those lines. The other bucket is on things that are considered immoral. So obviously, adultery is the biggest category in this. So in effect, it's legal wrongdoing that sometimes edges into moral wrongdoing.
Right. So does it seem like the public has an oversimplified view of the anatomy of a political scandal?
I think that's fair to say. Obviously, the contours of a scandal matter. Sometimes scandals are really easy to understand, especially things like moral wrongdoing, adultery, money laundering. These are things that kind of have a simple clarity to it. Those are the ones that have the most impact, at least are the most memorable. But sometimes it gets really complicated. I think about the case of Ken Paxton and the impeachment affair that almost brought him down. And it really is a confusing set of interacted things, people, rules, money changing hands, lots of controversy. And it's, I think, forgivable for a lot of voters to not know every nuance of it. So in a way, it does kind of contribute to the lack of effective scandals, where people are just sort of unclear about what exactly happened and why. They end up kind of throwing their hands up in the air saying, I'm not really sure.
Well, Ken Paxton, there are a lot of scandals to talk about. One of them is the allegation that he has had multiple mistresses. His wife, Senator Paxton, is divorcing him on biblical grounds. A scandal doesn't really pop until you have sex and money involved.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, and those are the classic kinds of scandals. And I think you're exactly right that, you know, people can pinpoint the things that outrage them. And so that's why, in a way, scandals kind of lay unevenly across the political landscape. But in the case of Paxton, yeah, I think it makes total sense that in this particular context, why you're seeing John Cornyn go after that as the number one issue. We just saw this kind of AI-generated ad to the tune of Love Shack. It described all of the things that Ken Paxton did and lightly hinted at some of the other corruption that they indicate he's been involved in, but that really hammer home the idea that he's been unfaithful. That's something, again, that voters really grasp pretty easily. Whether it'll be something that's impactful or not is a different story, but definitely it's the kind of scandal that people do gravitate to.
Well, John Cornyn is going after Ken Paxton. He has a 1-800 number you can call in to report Ken Paxton crimes. They really have made a big deal during the campaign to portray Ken Paxton as a scandaled, damaged politician, and that's something that would hurt the overall Republican Party. That has been his stay. But however, during the impeachment stuff that was going on in the Texas House and the Texas Senate, Cornyn did not say anything at all. In fact, he was pretty quiet. So it seemed like this was really political opportunity to now go after Paxton's scandals. So it kind of shows that there's context involved in when does a scandal become a scandal.
That's a great point. Yeah, and obviously it's kind of determined by the contours of politics. We know that historically scandals have reduced vote share and have minimized campaign funds and have reduced longevity in office, but that's increasingly dependent on the partisan context, the type of the scandal, and the way that it's framed. So we definitely know that sexual scandals, corruption scandals, power abuse scandals all carry different kinds of weights with the American people. And we've seen parties less capable of policing this. I think your point is good that John Cornyn isn't willing to or able to weigh in on this until it's a partisan fight, where if the party itself was worried that Paxton was a liability, then they would do something about it. I think you're seeing that conversation emerge now because the question is whether or not Ken Paxton's a legitimate nominee and would be a liability for the party and its down ballot candidates in November. I think we don't really know that. Obviously, the polling suggests that Tallarico does pretty well against both Cornyn and Paxton, but it definitely is the case that this has become a more pertinent conversation. You mentioned Tony Gonzalez too, same deal there. The voters didn't really have a chance to weigh in ultimately on this. They did in the primary, and he got a substantial number of votes and may have actually ended up winning, but the party pressure kind of makes him kind of step aside. So I think that the more of that kind of policing from parties, the better. It's able to regulate these kinds of wrongdoings when they come up. And it does, to some degree, clear the Aegean stables of some of the problems that parties face and the ways that voters talk about and think about politics.
Well, that's what I want to get at is the pressure. Which pressure matters? Probably, you know, there's certain pressure that has more, you know, that builds up and has more consequence than others. So finally, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, had to say, you know, we want him to drop out of the race, and he did, but he did that in an open letter. He could have done that individually. It seemed like he wasn't just signaling Tony Gonzalez that we want you to drop out of the race, but he was also signaling people who would fund his reelection campaign in the primary. I mean, there's a lot going on behind the scenes in a political scandal. It's not just the allegation. It's not just the letters to the editor and the tisk, tisk, tisk of happening in public. There are a lot of moving parts.
That's so true. And I think that more of that accountability is really needed. One of the things I make clear in the book is that the problem of scandals going away is that we no longer have this mechanism to be able to police the rules we've put into place, to be able to question the institutions that we have, to be able to really to hold politicians themselves accountable for the kinds of actions that they take while they're in office. Sometimes it's personal, but sometimes it has real influence on the system. So we need more of that. So I like your point about how this has to be something we think about in terms of where those pressure points are. The problem is that the pressure has become less impactful, that politicians are less shameful than they used to be or shame-focused than they used to be.
Yeah, but they might be getting better at dealing with that type of pressure. But I think the more the public understands how a scandal works, which pressure points apply, then maybe they would be able to hold more politicians accountable. So I want to dig into that as we get later into the program. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Colin, what is your favorite political scandal? We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about political scandals. Brandon Ruttenhouse has written a book about that. Scandal, Why Politicians Survive Controversy in a Partisan Era. You can call in. What is your favorite political scandal? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Why do we have scandal amnesia? Why do some of them we just forget about entirely and some of them really stick in our mind? Let's go to Greg on the phones. And Greg, you're on the air.
How's it going? So I just wanted to say that I feel that scandal in today's day and age is becoming more and more biased. I feel like, with the passing of Jesse Jackson, nobody ever spoke of his infidelities. And I just feel that maybe there's a little division there. So that's all I had to say today. But, yeah, I just feel that somewhat it's become scandalous. Scandal has become a bit biased in today's day and age.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate that call. So infidelity with people running for office, people in office, public figures, Brandon Ruttenhouse, it seems like, I mean, really, it's everybody. Let's just be frank about it. I mean, you can't really, it's going to be tough to find somebody who hadn't, guilty of that. But when does it become a scandal?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, for the book, I look at scandals that happen while a politician's in office because we want to measure the impact of them when it comes to like how they're going to handle their political life. Obviously, lots of things come to light after. We have just obviously witnessed the revelations about Cesar Chavez. So there are all kinds of things that happen post-career for a lot of politicians and public figures. But I think that Greg has a really good point, and that's that you see people forgetting a lot. And it's not surprising in a media environment that's so rapid fire, but it definitely is partisan in a way that people forget in the same ways they remember. They're looking at things through a partisan lens. So I do this simple test in the book where I ask people questions about various scandals in the past of involving key politicians. And not surprisingly, people who are of a particular political stripe will well remember those scandals involving people who they're or opponents, but they are often likely to forget those scandals that influence or that are affected of the people that they are associated with politically. So we do see a lot of political forgetting. The reason is because we have this affective polarization, basically this tribalism in American politics where it's us versus them. Media distrust is another blunt instrument when it comes to minimizing the consequences of scandal. So partisans are increasingly defending co-partisans when it comes to these scandals, and they discount disparaging information as bias or witch hunt. And when it's their politician, their favored person involved, they tend to ignore it or tend to forget it. So we do definitely see this happening in a very partisan way, the same way that every other kind of process when we are thinking about political information functions.
So your premise is that back in the day, there was more accountability. Scandals stuck and people had to deal with them, resign or figure out a ways to be held accountable. I want to go into the Wayback Machine. And so back in the day, you know, if your political scandal made it to Johnny Carson's monologue, that's when you knew you were in trouble. This is Johnny Carson from the January of 1992.
Here's Johnny.
It's that kind of night. What are we going to talk about? I guess we could talk about the travails of Bill Clinton. Boy, that's politics, right? The poor Clintons, they've been all over the tube. They were on 60 Minutes, you know that? Yeah. Mrs. Clinton did Primetime Live with Sam Donaldson. I think things tonight are going a little far. I understand Governor Clinton and Jennifer Flowers are going to be on studs. You know what? The news media is thrilled with Jennifer Flowers. They were terribly frightened they might actually have to cover news and issues. You know who Jennifer Flowers is? You've been following this? She's the one who says she has some tapes that Governor Clinton called her and they had an affair. He denied it. Now they're accusing Jennifer Flowers of lying because she claimed, first of all, she was a backup singer for Roy Clark. Then she claimed she appeared on Hee Haw. And in another shocking revelation today, she revealed she once had a passkey to the trap door on Junior Sample's overalls. Did you know that Hillary Clinton, Mrs. Clinton's wife, apologized to Tammy Wynette? Because apparently she made a quote from one of her songs or something. Got a lot of publicity. So not to be outdone, Paul Tsongas today made an unkind remark about the pan flute just to agitate Zamfir. What he did. But Jennifer, don't worry about Jennifer Flowers. She got a new job. She got fired, you know. She was a receptionist at an unemployment agency. She got canned, but she got a new job today as a Donald Trump backup mistress. That's right. For any reason, Marla Maples is unable to fulfill her duties, Jennifer steps in.
So Brandon Rodinghouse, Johnny Carson, doing political humor, late night, king of late night. How important was it that Johnny Carson was picking apart the scandals? And we heard about Donald Trump.
That's so funny. Yeah. Great throwback to the early Trump political career and to Studs from the 90s. So
very 90s.
Love to see that. But I think you're exactly right. I think that the kind of nationalization of politics at that point, when you made that happen and it was your scandal splashed across the front pages, that it was real news. And it definitely underscores the idea that the way the media function now is so much more rapid fire and all inclusive, that within minutes, the scandal is everywhere. And then minutes after that, it's nowhere because something else has taken its place. So constant controversy, consistent scandal, just partisan shaping of the news and the events, the fact that we're living in our own media ecosystem, this siloed reasoning really does create this moment where people no longer kind of all look at the same thing the same way. And those two things are distinct, right? Looking at the same thing, which is something that we don't do because we're all looking at different types of news, and looking at it the same way in that it's interpreted different ways by different news organizations and through our own partisan lenses, means that we no longer see scandal as a kind of common thing. So Johnny Carson in the 90s can talk about a scandal as being something that's impactful and we're all joking about it. But now that is really kind of a quick hit in X, or it's something you see on TikTok or Instagram, and then the next day there's something else. So that definitely has ramifications for American politics generally, but also for how scandals land.
I'm going to go to a caller. Let's go to Donnie. And Donnie, we're short on time, but you're on the air.
Okay, political scandal. Ann Richards, Clayton Williams running for governor. Clayton said something about women had to sit back and take it. Okay, that was doomsday for him. We used to vote both sides of the ticket back then. But anyway, that's for sure. That's what I remember.
Yeah, that was a good one. Donnie, thank you for that. Clayton Williams running for governor said that bad weather was like sexual assault for a woman, and that torpedoed what he looked like he was on track to win that. And so today, you think, Brandon, that would have torpedoed a career?
I don't think it would have. In fact, there are a lot of people who would have celebrated that. People like politicians who are outspoken. They like people who speak their minds. They want authenticity. And to some degree, that translates into being crass, and the kind of lack of shame that people feel publicly in terms of the things that they say and do definitely has implications for whether or not scandal still matters. So I totally agree. I think that in today's day and age, that kind of a comment wouldn't even register. It'd be a day of story. Whereas in this case, it had real ramifications for the way that that race shaped.
Right. But you have to wonder about fake outrage and how that plays into the world of scandal.
Definitely so. And there's no doubt that anytime some controversy comes up, you're going to see opponents try to capitalize on it. That's the nature of politics. It's just getting harder and harder for it to really land. It almost seems like people are going through the motions now when it comes to responding to these things because they recognize that the impact is pretty moderate. The reason I think this is still useful for politicians to call out this kind of behavior is to be on record to say that these things are not okay when they're said, but also to be able to try to hold the norms of American politics to some kind of standard. We should have this kind of basic decency in politics. I think people really crave that, and they're constantly inundated with all of this morass, and it, I think, makes people dislike American politics. And so, not surprisingly, we're seeing voter turnout kind of lackluster, except in these kind of big blockbuster moments. So,
all right, we got to go to break right here. And Daniel and Sean, hang on. We'll be right back after this. This is The Source. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Once it was thought that a political scandal was the kiss of death for a promising political career, but today, however, surviving a scandal seems to be just the way it goes. Donald Trump has weathered, even perhaps benefited from, controversies that would have been unimaginable for virtually any other candidate. Prominent figures from both parties have won elections and remained in office despite credible allegations of wrongdoing. Do scandals still matter? When and why do voters punish politicians or give them that free pass? We're speaking with Brandon Rodinghouse. He's the author of the book Scandal: Why Politicians Survive Controversy in a Partisan Era. You can call in with your favorite scandal. 800-833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and we're going to go to Daniel. Daniel, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
He's the author of the book Scandal.
Whoops, turn off that radio in the background. It'll work better.
In the partisan era, you can call in with your favorite scandal. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we're going to go to Daniel. Daniel, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Okay, hello?
Yeah, Daniel, turn off the background radio when you're on the air.
Okay, I'm turning it. Okay, I'm doing that now.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I want to say that I don't have a scandal of too many to think of, but particularly the politicians, I think, are reflecting the society at large, where it seems that the way to go is just BS. You've got your public face and your non-public face. And if you can get away with murder, do it. Look at all these crime shows and everything. If you can do something and get away with it, do it. That's what they're teaching the youth. It looks who's in the leadership of our country. Look at that. What kind of a lesson is that to everybody? But anyway, if you can do it, and you get away with it, and that's it. And that's wrong, because I was brought up that you just don't do something dishonest and wrong like that, and you fess up to it and deal with the consequences, and that's that. And today, it's just a generational thing, and I also don't think most people think in this negative sense. Our values, our ideals, the American ideals are alive and well, and I still believe in them, and I know many people that do. Mm-hmm. However, we seem to be going into the minority because of the perpetuation of the baloney.
All right, well, Daniel, thank you for that. So, Brandon Rodinghouse, we have a representative of the democracy. Is this what they're representing? Is this just the way people are these days?
I sadly agree. I think that we're definitely seeing politicians echo what they think people want. I also agree that it's not what most people want, but the fact that most politicians are stuck in this echo chamber of polarization means that they're basically just regurgitating what it is that they see. I would also suggest that you're seeing kind of this playbook form where over time, people are getting better at managing these scandals. There's a kind of way that they can be wiggled out of, and politicians have become really good at accomplishing that. Much of it is based upon this kind of partisan basis. So affective partisanship, this polarization of us versus them, is the strongest predictor of scandal reactions. I have this survey work in the book that basically looks at how it is that people assess scandals. And one of the things I find is that dislike of the opposition party increases an enjoyment of opponent scandals and leniency towards one's own politician. So partisans interpret these identical facts differently based upon identity and loyalty. What this ultimately means is that you've basically got this this split, and partisanship is driving much of it. So politicians are kind of reflecting these different changes, these norms that are really about partisanship in our larger world. The other thing I do here is to ask people about kind of next generation scandals. What happens if there's the presence of a digital nude or intoxicating photos or a social media crash out? This basically is a way for us to measure kind of how sensitive people are to what will be like the next generation of scandals. There's still a lot of difference here. And of course, because they're not real, we're kind of just teasing out some of what it might mean. But we do still see this idea that norm bending is pretty common, but norm breaking is not. There are still a limit where there is a point at which people will object and will see a scandal as a real problem, but it is definitely farther along than it was in the years past. So as we've been talking about, the nature of scandal is changing, and the way that people assess and process that is also changing.
In the age of AI, where we can generate fake videos, pretty much anyone can do that, and fake audio, it's going to be harder to nail a politician with video and audio. I mean, they could have said that the Access Hollywood audio was AI if it had existed at that time. I mean, do you think that's going to change things?
It's a really great question. And there's some work that looks at this very issue where politicians who are caught red-handed effectively with real documentation are less likely to try to claim that it's misleading or it's wrong, so, or fake news, or however they want to frame it. The good news is that we've got lots of new ways to hold politicians accountable. We've got this track record. We've got, you know, media efforts. We've got video we can show people. But as AI continues to evolve and gets better and better at what it does, it's going to be harder for us to assess what's truth and what's not truth. So we're seeing that line already be pretty close to being crossed, right? We've definitely experienced this in Texas with the U.S. Senate race and other kinds of races. So we're definitely going to see more of this as we get kind of more technologically advanced.
I've noticed that as politicians, when they get caught in a scandal, let's go back to Trump and the Access Hollywood tape, he said it was just locker room talk, which people were willing to accept. And so I say the quality of the excuse or the quality of the lie doesn't matter, but it provides a framework for the people who support him and enables them to not abandon him, and they will stick with that. It was just locker room talk, even though it makes no sense, because you're the same character whether you're in a locker room or in a bus. So can you talk about that?
I think you're right. One of my pet theories of American politics is that it's all about eyeballs. It's all about attention. And attention's good, whether it's good attention or bad attention. I think that has serious implications to the way that we govern and whom we choose as our leaders and the way that they act in office. But the politicians currently spend most of their time on social media. They're spending most of their time in front of TV cameras. And I think the reason is because they think that that's what the game is. And a lot of people are leaving Congress specifically saying they don't want to be stars anymore. They don't want to be TV officials anymore. They want to govern. They want to go there to make a difference. And increasingly what their job is to kind of push partisan agendas through these social media channels. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And it definitely kind of accelerates the way that partisanship is perpetuated. It also, to some degree, coordinates with what we've been talking about, which is where in the middle of these scandals, you can just keep talking and it doesn't seem to really hurt you. That's maybe a Trump phenomenon to some degree, and certainly he's been very effective at it, but redirecting efforts or just continuing to have eyeballs on you has real consequences. It means you get free media, which is obviously lucrative from a political perspective. We're also seeing evidence that when you're in the middle of these scandals, you tend to have a fundraising bump. It actually increases your visibility, your base tends to like it. They send you more small dollar donations as a way to kind of protect you against the kind of powers that be. So there is, I think, currency in this kind of activity. When confronted with scandals, politicians will simply kind of try to, you know, say whatever it is that they want to get out of it, but it definitely ends up being something that has serious consequences for the way that they are treating the political system and us.
Let's go to Sean on the phones. And Sean, you're on the air.
Yes, you were talking about the next generation of scandals. I'm wondering, has there been any shift? You see evidence of shift around consenting adult relationships? I understand, like an affair, there's literally somebody who might not be consenting to that relationship, right? Somebody's secretly doing something, but there's all kinds of alternative relations today. Non-monogamy is on the rise statistically for younger people. There's all kinds of alternatives. What I'm picturing is a few years ago, Katie Hill was a politician from Democrat. I think she was in a throuple and she consenting adult relationship, but she was removed pretty quickly. I'm wondering has there been any changes in perceptions around just adults in consenting relationships, or is that still just, as you said, like that's a barrier that has not been crossed? Thank you.
And there was also photographs of her that they released, which was also very distasteful and unfair. But in Tony Gonzalez's case, this was a subordinate. They're saying that it's also a violation of House rules, which was a consequence of the Me Too movement. But if there's, you know, consenting adults having an affair, it seems like, is that fair game, Brandon?
It's a really great question. I think a good point, because we certainly see norms changing. And as those norms change, the nature of scandals change. I haven't seen specific work on this, but we definitely have some anecdotal evidence that adultery is not the kind of career killer that it used to be. That is what people often mention to me when we talk about scandals. They say, like, we're more like France now, where there's a kind of, you know, norm that adultery is fine or it's acceptable for people in power. I think that's probably fair to say. The ways that this manifests oftentimes is the context that matters. And I think, David, as you said, the nature of how the evidence is presented and what exactly is happening does matter. So in the Katie Hill case, she made comments last year, maybe the year before, saying that she wouldn't have resigned in the current moment. And I think that reflects the idea that we are seeing these changes in terms of the norm. So to me, I do feel like we're finding that. The other thing to note in terms of context is that when I test people's pervasiveness when it comes to their acceptance of these different types of scandals, we can look at scandals that happened in the distant past versus the more recent past. So I ask people questions about whether or not a scandal, you know, from an adultery point of view was important 6 years ago or 6 months ago. The more recent, the more damaging. So that context does matter too.
Taking a break here. We're going to get some of these callers on the air. Matthew, I'm going to get you on the air when we come back from the break. Hang on. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It's The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, speaking with Brandon Rottinghouse. He investigates why political scandals are less likely to end careers today. He argues that intense partisan polarization, our tribalism with politics, our fractured media, and reduced public trust allows politicians to weaponize controversies, leading to diminished political accountability. You can call in with your questions and comments about that. 833-877-8255. Let's go to Matthew. And Matthew, you have the air.
Hi, I'm a biology. I have a degree in biology and was a teacher in Texas schools. I'm now retired. We're having a religious discussion. There are Bibles in every classroom I was in as a substitute teacher. You guys use the word race. Race was disproved in 2007.
So, Matthew, is this related to the topic?
And now we're worried about is normal. It used to be Cuba until Fidel freed the prostitutes. I'm really disappointed in public radio. It is not a public service if you continue to deal with delusional magic thinking.
All right. Well, thank you, Matthew. I appreciate your call. Okay, now let's go to the next caller, and that would be Frank. And Frank, you're on the air. Go ahead, Frank.
I was wondering if you could talk about national security. It seems like there's a lot of honey traps going on, and there's like the media doesn't expose it. Like right now, there's a lot of redactions on the Epstein files and like media ownership. It seems like they pick and choose who gets exposed. Can you talk about that?
All right, Frank, thank you for the Epstein files, honey traps, and threats to national security. Brandon Rottinghouse.
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, there's, I think, a media environment now where people are distrustful of a lot of things that are coming out of official government or the media, and that distrust certainly is creating this kind of issue. I think for sure the lack of scandals importance for most voters is connected to some of these issues. We used to, like we were talking about with respect to Johnny Carson and some of the kind of national politics of scandals, that trust sort of institutions to give us this non-biased approach. And it's something that we, I think, have seen come about in people's minds. I don't know how true it is. There's just not a lot of evidence that there's a tremendous amount of media bias, at least collectively. There are some institutions, of course, that have one particular point of view, and that clearly is connected to politics and partisanship. But in general, I think what we're seeing is that people's lack of trust in the media is creating this moment where, again, scandals are less important because you don't even agree on a common set of facts about what a scandal is or about what a scandal did. So that definitely is contributing to some of these bigger picture items.
And Valerie, let's go to Valerie on the phones. You're in the air.
Hi. I grew up kind of watching the Bill Clinton scandals, and it definitely instilled and stuck with me that the cover-up is always worse than the actual event that took place. And I feel like it's literally shaped me. Like, all my skeletons are out there, nobody can hold anything against me. And maybe now, like, I don't see people trying to cover up what Donald Trump said or what he did. More, it's just making exceptions for his behavior. And I think that that might be part of the reason why it feels less scandalous.
Wow. Valerie, thank you for that. Some good points there. Donald Trump seems to be doing everything out in the open. So, you know, his NFTs and crypto and other things that he's involved in that are kind of would have been scandalous before. Brandon.
It's a great point. Yeah, that has become the watchword in politics, that basically the cover-up is worse than the crime. We've certainly seen lots of evidence of that. I think politicians are more likely to come clean now than they have been in the past. We also know that when politicians stonewall, that there are particular political characteristics around that. In particular, this is the same way politicians generally survive scandals, and that's that they have a partisan base of support to be able to rely on. So I look at effectively the way that politicians are holding on to office after they're accused of scandals. And so after the Clinton administration, during the kind of more polarized era, hardened partisan preferences and intra-party loyalty diminish the incentives to resign and or to be able to hide information. So basically, when politicians have a stronger base of support, either in the public or in their legislature, they can hold on for longer because they have fewer risks that what they say and do is going to hold them accountable. So I think that's part why you're seeing Donald Trump so effective at being able to hold on during these scandals, is that he's got this impenetrable base of support in the public and in his party. But beyond that, then, in terms of the institutional capacity for him to survive, say, an impeachment, it's definitely connected to his ability to survive.
During the Clinton Monica Lewinsky scandal, where he was impeached, they kept saying character matters, character matters. And does character not matter anymore?
It's a really good question. I think it matters to some degree. It obviously affects the way people perceive certain politicians, and we see that reflected in polling. But when people are pushed to vote for one candidate or another, they're going to back the partisan tribe that they're most favored. So that is going to absolve a lot of politicians from the kind of actions that they undertake and the kind of potential character flaws that are out there. So in a way, it still matters, because I think holistically people would choose candidates among those that are more moral, that are more affected by the kind of work life and the kind of family life that people generally have. But it's also the case now that partisanship has wedged itself into this process where we're forced to choose, because the two-party system effectively gives us these two choices. Oftentimes candidates we might not like that much, but have to choose among.
Well, Brandon Ridinghouse, he is professor in the Department of Political Science at University of Houston. He's written several books about Texas politics. His latest one is Scandal, Why Politicians Survive Controversy. Brandon, it's great to have you back on the air. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, David. My pleasure.